Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Well, if I'm going to be a watchdog, I better watchdog everything, including what's on our station. I was listening to CBS News, and they had a one-line story at the end. A former Trump, I think they said lobbyist, is out on bail. He was accused of doing something with the United Arab Emirates. How is that one of the most important stories in the country? In a three-minute, well, it's a former Trump guy, lobbyist. So that's one of the very most important stories in the United States of America today. Amazing. I've been following and looking at every news site all morning. I didn't see it anywhere. It's crazy. Man. Hey, welcome. Welcome to you from the Carter Subaru Studios. Welcome to the Big Show, Friday edition. I have one more thing from CBS, too. I couldn't help but notice this.
CBS's Steve Futterman tells us from Tokyo it was still festive.
The opening ceremonies were festive at the Olympics today.
The ceremony here lasted nearly 4 hours. There were a number of solemn moments, including a tribute to those who have died in the pandemic. Hundreds of athletes took part in the Parade of Nations, but it was far fewer than the usual number.
Okay, the stands were empty. It lasted 4 hours. They paid tribute to hundreds who have died from COVID. Oh, this sounds really festive.
There were, of course, no fans in the stands. At the end, the emperor declared the games open. Then tennis star
Naomi Osaka did the torch. That just does not sound festive to me. People walking around an empty stadium and paying tribute to the people who have lost their lives to COVID. Wow. That's a different definition of festive in my book. All right. Welcome to the Big Show. Man, we have a lot of stuff that we need to get to. Let's jump right into the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I told you so.
I told you so is going to be a big theme here because sometimes there's a chance that I'm wrong about things. I'll concede that. But there are other issues on which I am 100% certain that I am correct. And I'm going to give you an example here. I'll give you a couple of examples. We found out that the Attorney General of our state, Bob Fergie Ferguson, he's sending signs that he's going to require mandatory vaccination for his entire staff. The governor is really upset with the WSU football coach because the football coach won't get vaccinated. He's the only Pac-12 coach who will not get vaccinated. And there are just a lot of people who are choosing to not get vaccinated. There's some shocking news today that nobody is reporting. I have not seen this in any news site. The University of California system is going to require all students and staff be vaccinated. But they also said this that has gotten almost no attention. Infectious disease experts anticipate that annual or more frequent boosters will be necessary. So now the pharmaceutical companies are manipulating that not only must everybody get vaccinated, and I think that's a personal decision, and I think if you make the decision for yourself to get vaccinated, as I have, I think that's perfectly fine. I don't see any reason why kids under the age of 30, I know 30-year-olds aren't kids, I don't see any reason why they should get vaccinated. But now it is so obvious to me what is happening, and I don't know why no one else will acknowledge this. This is about pharmaceutical company revenues. Nobody trusted the pharmaceutical companies 2 years ago. And now they're saying not only are they trying to get government to get these mandatory vaccinations, and we're talking about government officials at public universities mandating what free people in a free society must do when there is really no health benefit to the nation of young people getting vaccinated. But not only are they working for mandatory vaccinations, but now they're saying, and you're going to need to get one or two boosters every single year. Do you know how many billions of dollars that will drive to Moderna and Pfizer and Johnson, AstraZeneca? Do you realize how many tens of billions that that's going to drive? Did you know when you got your two shots, did you know that they were going to say, oh, you're going to have to get one or two boosters every single year for the rest of your life? This is insane that nobody recognizes the at least the possibility that pharmaceutical companies are working with sleazy politicians to confiscate hundreds of billions of dollars from the American people through our children. And I got to tell you, this is one I'm absolutely certain of. You should be free to get the vaccination I chose to. But I'm telling you right now that there is not a great public health reason to do so. And I'll also tell you that this is about pharmaceutical company revenues. Now, the mandatory vaccination, University of Washington and Washington State University are requiring that of students. One of those students is young Andrew, who is our engineer for the first hour of the show every day. And you shared something with me yesterday, Andrew, off the air, and I asked you if you minded talking about it. So what's your situation with the vaccine?
Sure. So long story short, I'm a student at the University of Washington, Bothell. And I've been pursuing a degree that's kind of specific to that campus, not just the university, but that campus.
Okay.
Since 2018. And now that this vaccine's come up, now I'm going to have to get it. So it feels like I've been a bit, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, I feel a bit locked in because I can't really, it's going to be a pain in the A to get to take this specialized pseudo communications degree and transfer it to a different university. I don't know how that's going to transfer, how many credits I'm going to lose. I've already put a bunch of money into the schooling, and now it turns out, oh, you got to get vaccinated to get a degree now, basically.
Right. So you're 3 years in. You've been paying tuition for 3 years. Do you mind my sharing a little more about your situation, your story? Or I don't know if people already know, but you've had COVID, right?
That's right. I wouldn't call myself a survivor, but I certainly did get a confirmed non-rapid test for it.
Yeah.
And quarantined myself effectively, so much so that nobody in the household that I live in, none of them got it. I was able to isolate myself really well. So, and on top of that, it wasn't really that serious. At worst, I had like 101 degrees temperature for like a day. And
right.
It kind of,
so,
I didn't,
like,
I
like a flu.
Yeah, a mild flu. The H1N1 I got a couple of years ago, if you remember that, yeah. That hit me worse. I had 104 with that one. This one was nothing.
So, and you're 23 years old, so you're right in that age range where, you know, the doctor I talked to last weekend said that's the age. He believes in vaccinating kids, this doctor. But he said he advises young men and teenage boys, that they are in the age range where you are at a slightly elevated risk of myocarditis, swelling of the heart from the virus. So that's right. The one age group and gender where many doctors are saying, yeah, you probably shouldn't get the virus. Or there's more downside than upside, I should say. So what are you going to do? You don't want to get the vaccine because you've already had COVID and you don't need it. But what are you going to do?
A couple of things, I suppose. First is I'm actually having a physical today with my GP, so hopefully I'll be able to talk with him and get some insight. I think he also specializes in cardiology, so hopefully that'll be a fruitful conversation. But in terms of for the university, basically within this month, they've told me, here's a form to fill out. You either say you've gotten it and provide verification, or you file for a medical, religious, or philosophical exemption. For the time being, to be honest, I'm just kind of waiting to see what the university tells me when I I'm stalling. I'm not going to rush into saying one of those things because I don't know if I have. I could say a medical exemption is that I'm in this risk group, but I don't know. At this point, I'm just waiting to see how the legality of that plays out.
Well, are you going to be tested for the antibodies when you have your physical today?
I didn't think about that. I forgot there's an antibodies test. That's a very good idea. I'll bring that up.
Yeah, ask your doc for that today.
I'll write that down right now.
Okay, because, yeah, that would be powerful when you make your appeal to the University of Washington. All right, Andrew, appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so here's a guy who's been paying tuition for 3 years and does not want to get the vaccine, does not need the vaccine, might be in a slightly elevated risk because of the vaccine, and the government, University of Washington, is a public institution, so this is the government, is telling Andrew that he must get the vaccine or forfeit the tens of thousands of dollars that he's paid in tuition and books for 3 years at the University of Washington. I mean, this is insanity. And it's all so once he gets the vaccine, then he's got to get the boosters once or twice a year so the pharmaceutical companies can keep cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching up next in the big lead.
The big lead. I told you so.
Yeah, there's another one where I know 100% what's going on in our region that our politicians will not acknowledge. We have new shooting stats that are out today. In Seattle, drive-by shootings are up 100%. 100% in Seattle. In King County, shootings are at a five-year high. Our news partners at Cairo 7 talked to people in the community. Dow Constantine, oh, he cares so much.
This scourge, this epidemic of gun violence affects us all.
Oh, so what are you doing about it, Dow? Jenny Durkin, what are you doing about it?
We know that violence is a result of so many failed systems. And because for so long government has shirked its responsibility.
Oh, yeah. So Jenny Durkin announced today that she's going to spend $2 million of our dollars on stopping gun violence. I hope that works as well as the $150,000 we're paying to the former pimp who pimped out underage girls, who is now our street czar, making $150,000 a year. Should we maybe think about firing him? Because he was supposed to bridge gaps in our communities, and it's a failure. So you're giving this guy $150,000. And then you have Dan Satterberg.
What we're seeing right now is a very disturbing trend. It doesn't show any signs of slowing down.
So what about all that $2 million we're going to spend? Dan Satterberg, is that going to help?
Show them some other opportunities for their life. And they have a persuasive power that those of us in the system could never have.
This is unbelievable. This is absolutely unbelievable. Money is not going to solve this problem. Money's not going to stop this problem. Dow Constantine, Jenny Durkin, Dan Satterberg can help stop the problem. Dow and Jenny Durkin cannot. The problem is that drugs are legal in King County. All drugs are legal countywide because of decree from our county prosecutor. And we've got an open southern border thanks to Joe Biden. And the cartels are shipping drugs in, many of it laced with fentanyl. And they run right up I-5. And their destination is King County because this is where we have the heroin, the meth addicts who know that they can just use their drug of choice without any fear of punishment. They can walk into their store of choice and walk out with $500 worth of goods that they'll fence through a very elaborate network of fencing. I've been learning a lot more about that, how the stolen material is producing money for these guys. So they know that the Seattle City prosecutor, Pete Holmes, is part of the problem. Seattle City prosecutor, you know, that guy who was throwing rocks on the freeway 3 days ago. 30 previous arrests, 22 of them in Seattle. And this guy was still free and walking around because Pete Holmes will not put criminals in jail. Dan Satterberg has legalized drugs throughout King County. The cartels know it. The drug addicts know it. And the gangs know it because the cartels feed the gangs. The gangs sell to the addicts. The addicts steal from you and me. And the way you stop this is not by throwing millions of dollars at it. The way you stop this is by enforcing our laws. Don't make this the lowest barrier place to be a heroin addict. Let's get politicians who care about the good, honest, law-abiding, tax-paying people more than you care about the gangs and the cartels and the heroin and meth addicts. But you care about them so much more than the people who actually pay your salary. This I am 100% certain of. We have been throwing money at this problem for years and years and years, and it has gotten worse and worse and worse. The definition of insanity is what we are actually doing in this region. If you want to stop the killings, Jenny Durkin, Dow Constein, Jay Inslee, Dan Satterberg, Pete Holmes, you need a complete course correction. Legalizing drugs has not helped. It has crippled us as a region. Now, it is mostly young black and brown men who are getting killed. So maybe you're all the racists. You're the ones who are screaming racism all the time. I'm Jenny Durkin. That's what, in that Durkin soundbite, she said that it was systemic racism that is the reason for all these shootings. And then they all embrace policies that are 100% certain to kill young black and brown men. Yeah, I truly believe that Jenny Durkin and Dow Constein and Jay Inslee and Dan Satterberg and Pete Holmes are the true racists because they don't care. They know they could fix this thing, but instead they're just going, oh, let's give the former pimp $150,000. Let's see what that does. Jenny Durkin, oh, let's give all of these communities $2 million and see what that does. You think that's going to stop the drug trade? You think that's going to stop the killings? Of this, I am 100% certain. We have gone insane as a region by electing the people we have. And that's your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, I am so looking forward to talking to this guy. He lives in Fremont. He's put up a camera in his apartment's garage. And anytime he sees a crime, he runs out with a Glock and a baseball bat. The videos are hilarious. We're going to play the audio, and we're going to talk to the guy who's going to spend the whole next half hour with me next here on the Dory Monson Show. These are tough times for crime in the Emerald City, but we need a hero right about now. And I think I have a new hero. He lives in Fremont. His name is Gerard Tai. He joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Gerard, great to talk with you.
Thank you.
So let me play a couple of clips for my listeners. This one, a car pulls into your parking garage. They're going to steal a motorcycle, and you come running out with your Glock. Here's what it sounded like. Okay, I love how those guys are just screaming, or it's a guy and a girl, but they're just screaming like little girls. So you cock your Glock after they can hear it. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't rack the slide until I got downstairs.
Okay, but you do that for a purpose, so they can hear it every time, right?
No, it's just I don't want to run down the stairs with a racked
I gotcha.
Slide, so... anything can happen between.
Yeah, okay, I understand. So you started doing this. Were there real crime problems in your building before you mounted the camera and started chasing people down?
Well, probably about a year and a half ago, I forgot to lock up my truck, and I went down there the next morning to the garage, and I realized that somebody had been in the truck and rifled through it and took everything of no value, which was kind of helpful to me, but... Right. You have that feeling of violation. Somebody was in my truck, and Fortunately, my apartment sits literally over my parking space. So I got the idea to put a Wi-Fi camera, the Ring camera, which is Wi-Fi. And because the signal is really strong from my apartment to the garage. So I put one camera down there in the garage facing the motorcycles and my truck and the three parking spaces in that area. And at first it started out with somebody came in to searching the cars, checking to see if things are unlocked. My neighbor has a Mazda Miata, which they're pretty easy to break into. And then I had my motorcycle. My neighbor had his motorcycle. And at that point, there had never been an attempted motorcycle theft. But the worst thing that I had come the first 6 months of having the camera was somebody stole something that was attached to my motorcycle. It was just a little stylus attached to my handlebars. And I went down there and confronted the guy, and I was a little nervous. I had a bat, a baseball bat that I had purchased at Goodwill. And that's the first incident I ever had. And it was a young kid, and I don't know what he was doing. I was thinking, well, clearly he wasn't. The next time I had to go down there was somebody came in and was urinating in the garage.
That's not good.
The guy was 6'2", he's huge. And I guess I must have startled him to the point where he just felt so embarrassed. And then I decided when somebody else's car had been rifled through in the parking lot to put another camera that faced the parking lot. So I had a camera that faced the entire parking lot. You can link them in the viewing with your app, your phone, and then also online. And then I had the one in the garage.
So let me ask you, you've got a bunch of these videos on YouTube. How many times have you run out of your apartment and confronted thieves?
Probably 8 or 9 now.
So are you just watching the video feed constantly?
The camera detects motion, and then it starts to record anytime there's motion that it detects motion. Anytime there's motion, it detects it.
Okay.
And you can set they're really basic cameras, but they do work well for me, obviously. But the camera alerts me through my phone between certain hours. So I have my phone alerts to go between midnight and like 7 a.m. because it seems that's when
it's prime
most
time.
People are in thieving mode.
Yeah, I got you. So here's a clip from another one of your videos. People had backed a U-Haul into your parking garage, and then they were going to steal a motorcycle, run it up into the back of the U-Haul, and you came running out and surprised them.
Run it down!
In this one, Gerard, you're only wearing a thong, nothing else.
I'm not wearing a thong. I don't understand why. The video's a little grainy. It's dark, but I'm not wearing a thong. I'm wearing red briefs.
Those aren't briefs. Come on.
Those are briefs. But, I mean, you know, I've always said, because people have made comments about me running down there in a thong, and the only thing I can say is, you know what? One, at least I ran down there. And two, if you see me wearing a thong and I'm wearing the red underwear, that you saw what you wanted to see.
Well, that's obviously what I wanted to see, Gerard. And you always, you know, get the bleep out of here. In some of them, you have the Glock. So that one, you're smashing things as much as you can, and then they go speeding off. So, I mean, I am so impressed that you do this on a regular basis.
It's interesting because when I post these videos on the Seattle Wallingford Fremont Community Forum on Facebook, I get 75% of the people saying, "Hey, man, you're my hero. This is great. Would love to have you as neighbor. Just really be really careful." But then I've got a handful of people that are just appalled.
No. Are you serious?
Yes. It's amazing how many people are just appalled.
That's crazy.
I had one guy saying that, you know, with the baseball bat video, when I took the baseball bat to the catalytic converter thief's car, that I was exhibiting toxic masculinity. Another person saying that I was a danger to myself and society. And I have never,
In
the 8 instances I've had that were semi or very violent, I've never shot somebody and I've never hit somebody. That day may come, but the worst thing that I've ever done, I had this girl that was, she was mid-40s, 100 pounds soaking wet, wearing a, it's a real small framed woman, wearing a long coat. And I saw her, I watched her for about 5 minutes at 5 a.m. going through every car to check to see if they were open. And I went down there and confronted her. And I said, hey, can I help you? And she says, well, can I help you? And I said, you better leave because we're going to have a problem. And she said, well, what are you going to do? She said, are you going to hit me? And as she said that, I ran towards her and tackled her and body slammed her to the ground. And then a fight ensued. She's screaming with bloody murder. And I was picked her up and I dragged, because she was this woman, weighed almost nothing, grabbed her by her jacket, literally dragged her off of the property and pushed her out into the street.
Is that video posted? I haven't seen that one.
That video I didn't post because I didn't realize when I had these videos that I could save them at the time. This was new.
Okay.
But
yeah.
the only thing that she said after she had to pick herself up and dust herself off was, who's even up this early in the morning? So obviously these people aren't in their right mind. The U-Haul incident was my very first incident where I went down there with a gun. The reason why I was wearing just my red underwear is because I really wasn't prepared at all to do what I did. I had all my guns in the safe, and my safe has an 8-digit code, and I entered it backwards twice, and I'm watching them on my phone and I'm freaking out and, oh my God, they're going to get this bike. And I grabbed the first gun that was on the top, which was an FNX tactical 45 caliber. I grabbed that and just ran outside as fast as I could. And that also is the very first time I've ever pulled a gun on somebody that was ready to fire, no safety, and the bullet was chambered.
I mean, let me ask you, because the first video I referenced, you smash the driver's side front window, you smash the driver's side back window, then you open the door and you train your Glock right on the man and woman inside the car. I mean, you wanted to put the fear of God in them, quite obviously.
Now, in that one, I watched them for a minute before I went down. I was very angry because the first episode, the first thing that happened when they loaded the bike on the U-Haul on that video, we learned every time that something happens, we learn. And my neighbor, whose bike they were trying to steal, we bought an anchor system so that the bikes are anchored actually into the garage floor.
Wow. Makes sense.
So when I went, I watched these people on video for a whole minute try to move this bike because they just couldn't move it and they didn't notice that it was anchored to the floor. My boss saw the video and he said, you should have just gone down there and said, hey, is this your first time? but they were also trying to break the handlebar lock. But they were unsuccessful. And so when I went down there, I was ready. I was mad. I had no idea there was a person in the car waiting. So when I went down there, and it just all happened so fast and it was a blur. It was 4 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
The first thing I did was slam the door shut. And then I realized somebody was in the car. And that's when I busted out the driver's side window with the butt of the gun. And then the back window, I hit it a couple times. And then that one broke. And in the video, if you watch the video, the two people get in the passenger side of the car.
I saw that. And then one crawled across to drive off.
No, he pushed the girl that was screaming into the driver's seat.
I didn't know that.
So he pushed her over.
What a little coward he must have been.
And I had the gun right on him. And at that point, what am I going to do? That's when I just let him go.
Oh, man. All right. There are other videos I want to talk with you about, Gerard. So hold on. Gerard Tai, Fremont man, crime fighter. He's going to spend the rest of this hour with us. We'll hear more of his tales coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. We are back with Gerard Tai. He's a man who lives in Fremont. He's put up a security cam in his apartment building's garage, and he has several times confronted thieves with his Glock and with a baseball bat. And one of the ones I wanted to hear about was the catalytic converter thief. Here's a little bit from that video.
Yeah!
Okay, you said that one was your favorite. Tell me why.
Yes. The reason why, because I was prepared. That video happened at between 3 and 4 in the morning. But I watched them for a few minutes before because I had no idea what they were doing.
Right.
This car backs in, and I'm watching them on my camera, and I put on my sweats. I put my little compact 9mm in my pocket, grab my baseball bat, go down there, and I'm watching them around the corner. I've got pants on this time, and I've got
shoes. Thank goodness.
I saw them backed up behind the Prius and jacked up the Prius. I saw the Prius go up in the air, and right when I saw the Prius go up in the air, I realized what they were doing. Wow. And I had the element of surprise and the attitude to go with it, and I started swinging.
Well, let me ask you. So you go running down there one day in the future. You got the Glock all racked. You're ready to go. And the thief, instead of jumping in the car and driving off, the thief comes running straight at you. What do you
do? I'll pull the trigger.
Do you?
Oh, absolutely. Without hesitation.
You would not hesitate?
Nope.
Do you fear legal consequences if you do that?
No, because I'm 50. So I'm kind of have some wit about me. But if I feel that my life is threatened at all, I'm going to do what I need to do to defend it, and I'm not going to shoot to injure. But it will all be captured on camera. So if somebody runs up to me, whether they're armed or not, because I don't know if somebody's going to be armed if they're running up to me, they're going to know I'm armed when I come down there. I will fire.
Wow.
Without regard to their life and them
and
being there. If they're gonna...
Without remorse a day or a week or a month or a year later?
Well, you know, that's one of those things that I don't know.
Yeah, you can't project that. Yeah.
But I would say now, like how I am right now in my frame of mind and how I've lived my life and who I am, that no, absolutely, I would have no remorse. Why would I have remorse for somebody who was trying to harm me and I stopped it by ending their life? I would have no remorse.
I can't tell you, Gerard.
If somebody said, hey, how come, what justifies it? Well, this whole entire situation would have never happened if that person weren't on my property attempting to steal something that didn't belong to them.
Yeah. No, I understand. And I have to say, it's part of my job to watch internet videos, YouTube. I've been doing it for years and years and years. The videos you have posted are some of my favorite of all time. They're just hilarious to see a citizen armed, confronting thieves, and the fear and terror that they have. I have loved what I've been watching the last day or so.
Well, thanks. It's amazing when people see, if you read some of the comments on the YouTube videos, there's some people that think that they're staged, and believe me, they're not. No. I have to tell you that I went down there, the first time I ever went down there in my underwear, I was so scared. And yeah, it's funny to see that I was down there in nothing but my brief underwear, not my thong.
Right.
But I was so scared, and I was scared that, you know, I've got three people trying to steal a motorcycle. They went as far as to rent a U-Haul. And then the police can do very little to help me. And I ended up finding more information on the driver or the renter of the U-Haul than the police could. And
I get
still
it.
Nothing was ever done about it. But I was, every time I go down there, except for the baseball bat incident. The baseball bat incident was actually fun. For me, I was so excited to release a lot of energy. I knew my gun was in my pocket, and I also knew that they weren't armed. So I knew that because these people are here to steal a catalytic converter. They're not here to rob somebody.
Right.
And, you know, and if I would have clocked one in the head, okay, fine, I would have done that. But that was one of my favorites. But going down there armed with a gun with the potential to end somebody's life or have mine ended is not something that I would ever stage. and feel good about doing when I do it.
Sure.
So it's just odd that, you know, people say those things and they don't know what
I would be here.
I always reply, hey, you know, sure, it's date. Come on and try to get a bike. We'll see what happens.
Look, as pervasive as these crimes are in Seattle and beyond, I really think we need a hero. And Gerard Tai, I'm sitting here today telling you that you're my hero.
Well, thank you very much.
That's well done. Okay. Gerard, it's really great talking with you, and I appreciate everything you do. Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, Gerard Tai in Seattle's Fremont neighborhood. Let me know what you think. Text me, 98973, and we'll, right after the news, be back with Fast 15 here on the Dory Monson Show.